That music means it's time for some wild abandonment, or at least some abandoned bits of Manitoba that have been rediscovered and resurrected on the radio by everybody's favorite historian, Gordon Goldsborough. Good morning.
Good morning, Laurie.
Now, as I was listening at home, I heard you leave Terry a clue about this week's story. I think you hinted that it concerned a lonely site on the White Mud River, which at one point was touted as the next Chicago. I find that, like, what?
Well, that's a fairly common expression that people use when they want to boost some place. They say that it'll be the next Chicago because Chicago was one of the fastest growing urban centers in North America. So every time a new town or a new place would be founded, they would say, oh, yeah, our place is going to be the next Chicago. And of course, in the vast majority of cases, that just didn't
just
happen.
Nope. I think Winnipeg was the next Chicago as well, wasn't it?
In fact, yeah. And not only in terms of the rate of its growth, but a lot of its architecture is reminiscent of what you see in Chicago even today.
So what happened on the banks of the old White Mud River?
Well, if you follow the White Mud starts, of course, down south and west of Lake Manitoba. And if you follow it all the way to the lake itself, it meets a little sort of a stream called Rat Creek. And where the two streams meet, there was a community called Totogan going back over 200 years.
Okay. And then? I mean, it seems like not very much like Chicago so far.
No. Well, in fact, for the first probably several decades of its life, Totogan was really not much at all. There was an indigenous band that lived pretty much on the mouth of the White Mud River, and they were called the White Mud River Band. There was, of course, traditional livelihoods there. There was hunting and fishing. There was a fur trade post, for example, operated by the Northwest Company and then eventually by the Hudson's Bay Company. Delta Marsh is just to the east of there, and it was plentiful with wildlife. Of course, on the prairies just south of there, we had bison and other animals. So it was a really good spot to live, but a pretty sleepy spot. Not much really happened, at least not until the early 1870s. And that's where the Chicago part kicks in.
Okay.
Well, okay, so in October of 1872, a couple of members of the White Mud Band sold some land right at the mouth where these two rivers joined to a couple of Winnipeg speculators. One was called Angus Chisholm, and the other one was George Bubar. Mm-hmm. And these two guys, Chisholm and Bubar, decided they were going to then turn this into the next Chicago. So they built a sawmill, and of course, because you need lumber, you need timber to build buildings. Right. Supposedly they sawed over 1.5 million feet of lumber. They started selling lots. In fact, they advertised in the Free Press, what was called at that time the Manitoba Free Press. They advertised a sale of land. They had over 200 lots, apparently, that they had surveyed. I'm told even that there's a map of Totogan, or at least what they hoped would be Totogan, registered at the Provincial Land Titles Office. So they advertised these things for sale, and that's where the speculation kicked in, the boom, so to speak.
People actually bought the lots.
Indeed. In fact, I'm told that at least 180 of these lots did sell. And in fact, one of the early buyers of these lots was a fellow named Corydon Brown.
Corydon?
Okay, you're hearing Corydon, yeah. Of course. And that's because he was the basis for the name of Corydon Avenue here in Winnipeg. But this is way back. This is before he became noteworthy. He was simply an entrepreneur. He was hoping to strike it rich. He later, of course, went into politics, and that's where he became more famous. And that's because that's why he's
That's why he got
by
the street.
A street named after him. Another noteworthy person that arrived around this time was a young man named Pat Burns. Mm-hmm. He worked in the sawmill, but he gained fame when he later got into the meat business at Calgary. And, of course, he founded a little company that, became
Burns Meats.
Burns Meats, indeed, yes. Entrepreneurs of all kinds arrived. There were the Pratt brothers from Portage la Prairie, and they wanted to start a sawmill, a flour mill, and they indeed started the shipping. They realized, of course, that when you're on a river that flows into a lake, you could put a boat on the river and then out into the lake, and then you can travel all over the place.
Sure.
So they, in fact, launched one of the first ships, large ships anyway, on Lake Manitoba. And then later entrepreneurs, started steamboats, and so for a little while at least, there were steamboats running up and down Lake Manitoba that would come down and dock at Totogan.
So it all sounds like Chicago is in the offing. What happened?
That's right. Well, say for a few years, it was really going gangbusters. It had all the trappings of what would be a big center. In fact, I found a map from the early 1870s, a map of Western Canada, and it showed sort of the major centers. And of course, at that time, the centers we think of today, most of them didn't exist. We had the Red River Settlement, of course, which is now Winnipeg. But other than that, there wasn't a whole lot, but it did show Totogan. So what it illustrates is that Tatogan at this time in the 1870s was a going concern. It had a hardware store, it had a blacksmith shop, it had a hotel, a church. Well, in fact, they had a bridge, which itself is noteworthy because, you know, the prairies are covered by rivers. There's rivers meandering all over the place, but you had to cross them to get from one place to another. And crossing rivers is not always an easy task, especially when there's a lot of water in the river. So, in fact, Tatogan has the distinction of having had the first bridge over a river west of Winnipeg. You know, and it was only there for a few years, unfortunately, but there was an entrepreneur who decided he was going to make money because there were these people traveling across the prairies. They had to get across the river.
Toll bridge.
A toll bridge, yes. Uh-huh. So that everything seemed to be going fine. Tatogan was really going to boom. Unfortunately, they didn't count on the catastrophic years of 1881 and 1882.
And what was so catastrophic?
Well, I think people who live or play around Lake Manitoba today will probably empathize with these people if they remember back to the year 2011 when we had the catastrophic flood on Lake Manitoba.
Right.
Of course, it spread out across the countryside. Farms are flooded, homes, you know. Well, that is what happened in 1881. In fact, we don't know for sure how severe that flood in 1881 was, but we do know that there was a fellow who had a steamboat at Portage-la-Prairie, and he was able to basically steam across the prairie up to Lake Manitoba, over course when it was dry land, pick up a cargo of fish oil, and then steam back to Portage-la-Prairie. And that's, of course, completely impossible today.
Oh, okay, that was quite a flood.
It was.
So these guys didn't have a hot clue that this might happen?
Well, yeah, you'd think, because, in fact, the name Tatogan was the name that it was that it basically adopted when these English-speaking entrepreneurs arrived. Previous to that, it had been known by its indigenous name, Tatoganung, which I'm told means marshy ground, which, you know, is probably a pretty apt description. It's right next to the Delta Marsh, so marshy ground. And if they'd thought a little bit about why would they have called this place Tatoganung, they might have realized that, you know, this place is prone to flooding. So 1881, it was hammered. This growing metropolis suddenly found itself submerged. And even by 1883, 2 years later, the buildings at Tatogan were still under 18 inches of water. So it was a prolonged flooding.
Has a certain resonance.
Indeed. So nothing really much continued. And unfortunately, then the aspirations basically petered out at that point. There was a slight reprieve, though, that happened in the early 20th century because those ships that were plying up and down Lake Manitoba, they did continue. And it was kind of handy to have a place that you could dock. So in fact, in the early 20th century now, this is now a good 20 years later, they built a railway spur to the edge of the river. In fact, it was right opposite the old town site on the west side of the White Mud River as opposed to the east side. And that became a point for shipping gypsum. But unfortunately, the problem with that, of course, is that there's a big limitation, which is winter. Yeah. So you can't ship much in wintertime. So therefore, you had to make sure you covered everything you needed to do in the summertime. Well, a railway then was constructed up through the interlake up to the mine, which basically meant you could ship it year-round, and that was the death knell of steamboats on Lake Manitoba. So today, if you go to the site, you would be hard-pressed, I think, to know that there had ever been anything there. Hmm. There's certainly no buildings, there's no roads, In fact, the only thing I could find when I was there a few years ago was a few chunks of ash from the boilers of the locomotives that had come to the lakeshore, because, of course, these were steam locomotives, and they would produce what was called clinker ash, and those are strewn all over the place there. So you know that something happened that involved, you know, heat, but certainly not much of anything otherwise.
Wow. Yeah, not quite Chicago.
Nope, not really.
Good story, though. Nope. So what about next week? This is where you give me a nice little hint about something, right?
Right? Well, I'm going to test your trivia knowledge. Do you remember a television program called The Beverly Hillbillies?
You're testing my age, and yes, I do.
Okay, well, I remember them too, and I remember one of the characters in particular, a fellow named Jethro Bodine.
Oh, Jethro Bodine, yes.
And Jethro would always refer to a swimming pool as a cement pond.
Oh, yes, the cement pond.
A cement pond. Yep. So next week, we're going to visit a site where there are no fewer than six cement ponds, and I suspect that many of the listeners have seen them probably without even knowing it.
Thanks a lot, Gordon.
You're welcome, Lori.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Weekend Morning Show historian Gordon Goldsboro is here every Sunday with fascinating stories about lost and forgotten places in our province. And if you'd like to explore some of the other places that Gordon has documented, you can go to the web and search for them at the Manitoba Historical Society site. He'll be back again next week at 7:45 on Abandoned Manitoba on the CBC Manitoba Weekend Morning Show.